And it's no secret, parents are stressed out. The fortunate ones are working remotely from home, trying to balance the needs of their jobs, children now home 24/7, and the prospect that there will be limited or no school again in the fall. But as a new book points out, even before COVID-19, working parents were severely stressed, juggling demands of careers, their families, their health, with varying degrees of success. It's a book called Dreams of the Overworked, Living, Working, and Parenting in the Digital Age. And the co-authors join us now. Welcome Kristen Beckman. She is a professor of USC's Sol Price School of Public Policy. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Melissa Masmanian is associate professor in informatics at UC Irvine's School of Information and Computer Science. Good to have you on as well.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks, Tanya.
So you both studied 9 families working at a hospitality company, and everyone you studied was struggling with what you call the 3 ideals: ideal worker, ideal parent, and ideal body. Christine, can you explain more about those ideals?
Absolutely. These are the aspirations for what we want to be. We want to be workers that are accessible, achieving in our jobs. We want to be parents that provide enriching activities for our kids and spend quality time with them. And we want to be healthy. We want our bodies to be fit. We want to put healthy food in them. But doing any one of these things to our aspirations is nearly impossible. Work debt demands are always escalating. Parenting demands are a bit unreasonable, we might say. And so these working parents were always trying to juggle and trying to achieve on these 3 dimensions.
You all also focus on how technology complicates the situation by making us more available, and there are heightened expectations from bosses. I think all of us understand this idea, but Melissa, can you explain?
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is something I've studied for a long time, and I've always been fascinated by the fact that technology does allow us to do things differently. There are real kind of changes in our capabilities with constant connectivity, being able to have a smartphone in your pocket, being able to communicate through text, through email, all of these different channels. But how we use these capabilities really is up to us as a people, as cultures, et cetera, as workplaces, as families. And so one of the things I think we see broadly across these families, and probably applies to families throughout the country and the world, are that we're using these technologies to try and do better at what we value. So we're trying to enact those myths that Christine was talking about, to be better workers, to be better parents. But in so doing, we find ourselves in this trap where we're connected all the time because we all expect that each other is at each other's beck and call in service of being a good parent or a good friend or a good colleague. And so the expectations of availability and responsiveness really ratchet up.
You all conducted this study before the pandemic, before this other element came into play for parents, and that's parents being a teacher. Can you say more about that, Christine?
Yes, I think that it was hard before. It was hard before to be a parent and to juggle a job. And now you're a teacher as well as a worker, and you're having to monitor, like, are they getting their homework done? Are they on the right Zoom call? Sort of the coordinating, not just of your own life, but of their lives. And, they don't just sort of go to school. I think that level of monitoring and tracking it's unsustainable for one, right? That's just, we can't sort of do that and sort of show up to work, especially as we think about moving towards the fall and not really knowing to what level schools are going to be back. And I'm hearing lots of stories about different schools are doing different things. So you might have 2 kids who have different school schedules. This is going to continue to be a challenge. And I think we need to recognize how impossible it is and give ourselves a break about what is it that we can really stay on top of, and what are we just going to sort of let go? I mean, I think the perfect parent myth was always one that had too many things that any one person can do, 3 enrichment activities and family dinner and, tracking their technology, making sure they weren't on their devices too long. And like, it was already too much. And now it's over the top. So we have to dial back, I think, on what we're expecting of ourselves.
Christine, basically, you're speaking my life. You're singing my song with your words right now. I'm listening to everything you're saying.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Really, okay, I need to just let things go. Well, I already know. Like, I mean, the house is a mess. Let's just be real. So one thing had to go is that.
Yeah.
You talk in the book about how families need scaffolds. So that's basically other people to help them manage their lives, whether it be grandparents, to watch the kids, neighbors, daycare, house cleaning services. But that scaffolding is almost non-existent in this age of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Melissa, how should families be thinking about building support systems in this new reality?
One of the unexpected silver linings of this incredibly tragic time that we're living through is an appreciation of that scaffolding. And, you know, there's so much work that has to go into the home front, and much of that work is invisible. Some of it is visible but not valued, like who's cleaning and doing dishes and so forth. Some of it is truly invisible. So, you know, who's remembering to put things on a grocery list or coordinating with the housekeeper. So there's all of these different kinds of invisible work that we lay out in the book. And what we found was that all of these families were in different ways and different strategies finding help for this invisible work. And they have these different structures of scaffolding, and those scaffolds are the people that are kind of being called upon to do various forms of invisible work. It's so crucial. It's always been there. And now it's becoming a little bit more visible. And as we have more and more dual working couples, which is now the majority of American families, it's not the default that there's one person at home and doing all that invisible work and in charge of the home front and the other person going to work and not worrying about it. So the need for scaffolding has become stronger. And even now, I think hopefully we're beginning to realize how important it is. In terms of moving forward, I think that what we're seeing is really conscious appreciation of scaffolds and trying to find them where we can. So we have millennials moving home with their parents. We hear, you know, we hear a story of this, which is going to be a whole different kind of challenge. We see neighbors actually meeting each other and choosing to maybe have a like pod, a germ pod together for both practical and social support. Now, not everybody is in a privileged position to be able to do this, but just the very fact that we're appreciating the need and recognizing the work that goes into finding, cultivating, and maintaining scaffolding, I think is really important for the social fabric going forward.
Which really is brings us to our next question. I mean, you all wrote this book to illuminate what is a reality for so many families in this country and really the world. What are the changes that you want to see so we aren't killing ourselves to attain all of the ideals that you write about? Christine.
There's only so much we can do in our own homes, right? We can try and think beyond the nuclear family and find structures of support elsewhere. So we can do that. But there's only so much that we can do at home, right? We need organizations to sort of acknowledge the complexity of our lives and find better ways to support it. One of the things I've been thinking a lot about is if companies are going to save 30-40% of their income on office space, because we don't have that anymore, maybe companies need to do more to support us at home, right? There are companies that are paying for in-home childcare at this moment in time, since a lot of the daycares are closed. Why couldn't companies pay for someone to help deliver your groceries or clean your house? I mean, that would have a benefit of making that work more valued, right? It would make the wages better. It would provide more job security. So if we could actually find ways to take that work that we need at home and have organizations or the government help pay for it, I think it would raise the boat for everybody. And I think that would be really useful. So along with paid leave, which I think everyone can now see how important some of the policies are that we lack in the U.S., you know, paid leave, universal pre-K, funds that help us support and help pay for the scaffolding that we need. We need help, right? Whether that's our organizations or whether that's the government. I think that's what we hope this moment will help us sort of recognize and do differently going forward.
And of course, it's okay to ratchet down on the myths a little bit. So it's okay to take a deep breath and say, this is impossible. It's okay to remind your colleagues that you have young children at home. If you're in a power position enough to do that, remind them for your other colleagues who don't feel like they can. Recent survey shows that 70% of people say they're more productive during COVID. Well, that's 30% is probably a very clear population of people with kids. That's my guess. Mm. But these are real differences in who's able to thrive in the workplace right now. And I think it's on all of us to try and make that visible and make sure that we are able to accommodate the complexity of people's lives in the workplace.
We have to schedule meetings better. We have to use technology carefully. There's lots of things that we could do very concretely as managers and as workers to sort of accommodate each other better, right? Rather than just assuming we're always going to be there and be available.
Okay, I'm taking my deep breath right now. Thank you. That's Christine Beckman and Melissa Mazmanian. Their new book is Dreams of the Overworked, Living, Working, and Parenting in the Digital Age. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tanya.